Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with the next 3 hours. First of all, we've got a couple of guests in the studio, which I'll introduce in a minute. And then between one and two, we've got our legal hour. We've got, I believe, the big honcho, Grant Hutchison, coming in to talk to us. We've got some questions for him, and I bring in some answers from last time. And then between two and three, this Reverfest that's been going on. I think it started on about the 3rd of September. We did a quick interview about a week ago about it. We're going to find out a lot more about it between two and three. But so we'll be here for about 3 hours, and we'll impart some knowledge to you. But first of all, I've got Yarra Valley Water with me. We've had them in a couple of times, but they've always got something going on. And apart from what we're going to talk about today, I see that one of their people who's a trainer has been given a citation for being an excellent trainer. But the first thing we're going to do is introduce, first of all, Mark. And Mark's the Acting Divisional Manager of Assets Field Services. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Alan. Lovely to be here.
That's great to have you. And Chris, we've got Chris with us, and he's the Biodiversity Officer. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Now, we know you've got a few different things coming up I've just lost the track here. I'm sorry, we've given you the wrong microphone, Mark, so if you can move over to that one. Chris. And we'll be right. So, welcome again, Chris.
Again, very happy to be here.
Now we've got you. The audience couldn't hear the last one. Now, first of all, we're going to talk to Mark, and he's, as we said, he's Acting Divisional Manager of Assets Field Services. Chris, Mark, I've got to get this right. Mark, one of the things that we want to talk about, I know that you've got a... signed up a contract with somebody to help look after the assets. So I guess the first thing is, what's that do? But I guess the people are listening, they only want to know what it's going to do for them.
Yeah, sure. It's a really exciting contract that we've just entered into, Alan. Hopefully it's a 12-year contract with two partners, our two partners being Abergeldie and ServiceStream. The intent and purpose of this contract is to focus on renewing our infrastructure. So Melbourne as a city is ageing, as I think we all are.
Yep.
And through that, we've got assets and infrastructure that are over 100 years old.
I was just going to say to you that I've heard that some of the sewerage, in that, particularly in the city, are well over 100 years. Is that right?
Yeah, the city poses unique challenges, obviously, with the high-rise buildings, yep. Traffic and business. But even in the Yarra Valley Water, we have water mains that are well in excess of 100 years old, and they've really serviced Melbourne well. I think we've got a lot to be thankful for in terms of the way our city was laid out and the quality of infrastructure that we were delivered by our forefathers. Yep. The onus is on us now through this contract to identify where there's opportunity to renew these assets and do it in a way that minimises emergency repairs and disruption to the community.
Well, I suppose there's two problems there. First of all, there is a disruption while you've got to do the new work, isn't there? And so I guess you want to keep that to a minimum. But there's nothing worse, and I know it happened down my place only a few weeks ago, about 9 o'clock at night, the water pipe burst. So, I mean... And that's a real put out to everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be really inconvenient. As an organisation, our network spans over 4,000 square kilometres.
How many kilometres of pipeline?
We've got 20,000 kilometres of sewer and water infrastructure.
Have you?
Yeah. And as I said earlier, as our infrastructure ages, and with an asset base of that size, we do have failures. One of the things as an organisation that I'm really proud of, though, is we've committed over the next 5 years to spend $2.6 billion on capital outlay. So that's improving our current asset base and creating new ones, particularly through our Northern Growth Corridor where we are expanding. This program is a really important cornerstone of that investment to make sure that we are... obviously growing our network where we need to, but we're protecting and uplifting the quality asset for residents within the Yarra Valley.
I just want to ask you, and I don't know whether Coldstream is in your area.
It is, yes.
Pardon me. And it doesn't matter whether it is or isn't. Now, I noticed behind the shops there, they're building probably another 30 homes. So the more of these estates, I know the estates have all got new pipes down and that, But does that put pressure on the existing services that you've had as well?
Yeah, it does place demand as you create more properties, more connections, more people utilising our network. We've got a lot of really clever engineers in our organisation who work really hard with developers to make sure that the asset and the infrastructure network can support that development.
Yep.
And that it is suitable not only for the immediacy, but as that development builds out, that we've got enough water to supply everybody.
And I was just thinking, like, when you put, and we'll forget Coldstream because I don't want to sort of single out any area, but I guess if you put another 50 homes on the sewerage, what I'm trying to get at was our assets so well planned 100 years ago that they, because let's be honest, 100 years ago, this was only farmland and that's all it was ever going to be. So do those assets now, are they still capable of accepting all these new homes?
Yeah, they are. And one of the things that we work through as an organisation when we do when we support development of land through developers is making sure that we've done that assessment, that our infrastructure is sized appropriately, and if it's not, we'll work with the developer to make sure that we upsize where appropriate.
Yeah, because, I mean, there are gas... I don't want to get into the political side of gas and that, but I suppose electricity and water are a main staple diet, aren't they?
They are. Yep. They are.
I'm just going to take a quick break, and I'll be back with more.
Think of nothing better than dancing on the beach. See a girl, you can go and get her, your troubles will be out of reach.
On the beach,
you can dance to a rock and roll.
On the beach,
hear the bossa nova played with soul.
On the beach,
you can dance and twist and shout.
On the beach,
everybody hear me, come on out on the beach.
Come on everybody, stomp your feet.
On the beach,
you can dance with anyone you meet.
Cause your troubles are out of reach.
On the beach.
This is fun. Won't you tell me I'm the one you're gonna dance with? Yeah, bossa nova. This is fun. I know I'm the one you're gonna dance with. Yeah, twist and shout now. You can do the dance that you want to with anyone that you meet. And if the bossa nova doesn't get you, the twist will have you on your feet.
On the beach,
you can dance to a rock and roll.
On the beach,
hear the bossa nova played with soul.
On the beach,
you can dance and twist and shout.
On the beach,
everybody hear me, come on out on the beach.
Come on everybody, stomp your feet.
On the beach,
you can dance with anyone you meet.
Cause your troubles are out of reach.
On the beach.
And, of course, that was Cliff Richard on the beach. Not sure he'd be down the beach today, but just a quick reminder, I'll be here on Sunday between 12 and 3 with Music Memories and More, and then I'll be back between 6 and 8 and we'll be playing the Rock and Roll Hit Parade. So there'll be plenty of that music coming up this Sunday. But anyway, we're talking to Yarra Valley Water. We've been talking to Mark, and now we're going to talk to Chris. Chris, I'm just trying to find your actual title. I don't know that I've been given... Yes... No. Anyway, you're looking after the biodiversity, aren't you? Oh, yes, I have. Your habitat restoration project for our Upper Yarra Sewerage Treatment Plant site. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's right, Alan. I'm the biodiversity officer for Yarra Valley Water, and I am helping out the Great Nat Hackett with the Upper Yarra treatment plants.
So And that's, let me just, or let us just quickly remind, because I know we had an ad in, I'm sure.
Yep.
This is a project over a number of years, isn't it, and with other partners?
That's correct. So it's a pretty huge project. It's 35 hectares of land that's going to be revegetated to a standard that we can release some pretty critically endangered species back into. So there's a lot that goes into a project of that size.
And now you've got a couple of particular... you've got the endangered helmeted honeyeater and lead... beta possums up there too, haven't you?
Lowland lead beta possum. Yeah, so they're very, very critically endangered. There's only a handful left in the wild.
Is that only just in this area or over Victoria?
Yeah, so they're endemic to this region.
Oh, are they? Yep.
Yep. Which, you know, they've lost a lot of their habitat through various actions that humans do. And we're working to create... restore some of the habitat for them so that there'll be a safe space that their population can grow.
Do they have a natural predator that could help wipe them out as well?
I wouldn't say there's a natural predator. There's a couple of unnatural predators that we have in our backyards.
Yep. Are you foxes?
Foxes and cats, yeah. So feral cats are pretty dangerous for these guys.
Yep.
They're little birds, tasty little flying morsels for them. So one of the biggest things we're focusing on at the moment is creating appropriate fencing that'll be able to keep those feral species out.
Oh, right. Yep.
So there's no point in planting all these trees and releasing the animals out into the wild if there's no way to keep them safe.
Yep.
So we're looking at some pretty hardcore fencing solutions that will keep those more nimble predators out, so the cats and the foxes, but also keep the environment, the ecosystem within there safe. So we've got to consider that wombats like to move through. They're not a predator of these species, but they can make a fair bit of damage to the landscape. So we've got to consider that. Also, there are cattle that live next door, and we've got to make sure that the fence is robust
enough. Strong enough for them too.
Yeah, because those cows do like to scratch up against some fences.
Yep.
It's got to be sturdy enough to keep them out. Plus, robust enough to keep out those.
So part of this too, are you sort of got a breeding program for them, or do you believe when you get the actual habitat back, they'll breed themselves?
There is a breeding program going on through one of our partners. The zoos are doing their part to do a captive bred program. And then once this habitat is established and we've got an actual viable, sustainable ecosystem in place, then these smaller endangered species will be released in there, and we'll again rely upon some partners in the ongoing management and maintenance of this habitat and those species.
Let me just ask you, is it just the fact that they're sort of become extinct or could become extinct, or is there a reason why that we really need these creatures?
Well, these are our state faunal emblem.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
So there's a bit of Victorian pride there to keep these things going. But, Australia is one of the world leaders in species loss. It's not a great thing to be proud of.
No, not.
But,
not at all.
Yeah. So we've actually got, a responsibility to keep these species alive so the future generations can see them and can coexist.
All right. So is it mainly trees that we need to replant, apart from the fencing, and I know why that's got to go up, but is it mainly trees and that, or there are other things that these little critters need?
It's a whole ecosystem. So we got the wonderful trees that will be going in, but there's also the mid-story, so your shrubs and whatnot, and then there's your ground covers, so we've got wildflowers and herbs, and it all builds a healthy, sustainable ecosystem. And the more variety of plants you've got in there, the greater the biodiversity and the more resilient that that environment is to outside changes. So
what do these little critters feed on?
The helmeted honeyeater.
Yep.
The name gives it away a little bit.
Yep.
So they really love the sweet nectar sort of providing plants.
Yep.
And then you've got your little lead beaters, and they are you know, they'll feast upon insects, nuts.
Well, and of course, as you bring some of these other shrubs and that, they bring the other little
exactly
insects and that too, don't they?
Yeah. So they're not just going to eat the one thing. They're not going to prey upon the one thing. It's really, you know, that variety is the spice of life, really, and that's what we're trying to provide for them.
Oh, that's true. So how far into it? Because this is a project over some time, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a very long-running program.
Yep.
So we are aiming to break ground on the water, the hydrology aspect of the groundworks.
Now, let's go back, because the listeners and I don't know what hydrology means.
Okay, so we've got the sewer treatment plant that is providing really high-quality recycled water.
Right, yep.
And that is going to create this these damp forest conditions that these plants really need,
yep.
Alongside the Yarra there on the site. So we've actually got to terraform the land, if you will, to be appropriate for holding that water there.
Yep.
And creating the ecosystem that those plants need to thrive.
So have we started this project yet, or we
got the planning. So we're neck deep in all that planning.
Yep.
And there's a lot of planning you could imagine that will go into that.
When you say planning, are you talking planning to do the project by yourselves, or planning to get permits and all this sort of stuff?
Working on permits, planning out where the physical fence is going to go.
Yep.
You know, where each of these trees and communities of plants that we're putting in are going to be. So there's a lot that goes into it, because we're basically taking farmland,
yep.
And raising that up to be a forest, a natural bushland.
Would it have been a forest in the past?
Yes.
And we've cleared it, haven't we, for farming?
Yep, that's right.
Yep. So now we're turning it back to where it should be.
We are turning it back to what it was.
Yep.
And, yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
Now, you've talked quite a bit about the fence.
Yep.
So, I mean, apart from it's got to be strong that some cattle doesn't knock it up, what else has it got to be? Because it's going to have to... Do you get any rabbits up there?
Yes.
Do you have to keep them in or they don't... It doesn't matter?
I think it would be wonderful to keep the rabbits out, because we're going to have so many of these little trees going in, so many little plants, and a lot of them will be quite delicious for a hungry rabbit. So it's going to be a challenge to keep out all these grazers and whatnot. So there are deer there as well.
Yep.
We've got deer all over the place now.
Oh, we've got them everywhere.
Yeah.
And are they a problem?
I've seen them up there. So
when you put this fence up, do you want to keep the deer out?
Yes. Right. Yeah, so it'll play two roles.
Yep.
So it'll exclude these things that we don't want in there,
yep.
So we can create this habitat and have it healthy and sustainable.
Yep.
But it'll also keep the little ones in there and keep them safe, is the idea.
All right, I've just got to take another break and we'll be back with more.
part of me stays with you. I'm slowing down. What can I do? It's hard to stay one step ahead of you.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and I'm talking to Mark again. Mark, just one of the things before we do go on, with this new asset company, your two partners, what of the consumers themselves? Is it going to make any difference to them, or is it just that the pipes and that are going to be better looked after?
Yeah, this is a program in terms of our renewal, renewing our water and sewer infrastructure. It's something Yarra Valley Water have been committed to for a long time.
Well, as you said, some of the pipes are over 100 years, aren't they?
They are, yeah, they are. What we're really hopeful for with this program is we've partnered with two organisations who are really capable of delivering the work, but they're also really committed, like we are, to helping deliver better outcomes for the environment, better outcomes for community, and just an all-round better experience. So we're really hopeful that we're going to be able to attend to the work that's needed when it's needed, but do it in a way that really minimises that customer and community disruption.
Now, talking about the environment, I believe that you've come up with a new tape, and I didn't think you could come up with any sort of new things in tape. So it's an eco-friendly tape or something, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's a barricade tape. So for your listeners, I'm not sure how familiar people are with the term barricade tape, but it's a small, narrow tape. You often see it in crime scenes or police
have it around, yep.
Yeah, and it's really widely used, not only in our industry, but more broadly to, I suppose, cordon off areas from public access. We use a lot of this. We use over 100 kilometres of barricade tape per year across our many contracts.
Just barricading off where there's a leak and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, where our staff are working. It's a couple of things. It's really to make sure that the community can identify who that workspace belongs to and can contact the Yarra Valley Water if they need to, but also to keep our workers and the community safe from any hazards associated with that area.
Yep.
We've had a look at this over a number of years, and we've never been able to find someone in the market who has been able to develop and provide a recycled material.
So, can I just stop you there for half a tick? So, it's made out of recycled material. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the new product, we've partnered with a local Melbourne organisation. It's Australian-made, and it's made from 96% recycled material. The added benefit is it's also recyclable in itself. So
I was going to ask you that. Was it this perk?
Yeah, it's a real circular sort of economy project. And for us, it is a small change to the way we deliver work.
Yep.
But we see this having a big impact, not only for ourselves and our customers, but hopefully for the industry more broadly as it starts to get some traction.
So if it goes into land, well, wherever it goes, it'll break down, or you can recycle it?
No, but the intent is to recycle it. So through our main delivery partners, we've actually organised to have special bins at each of their businesses.
Yep.
So their staff can bring it back from the field, place it in those bins, and we know that it's actually being recycled and it's not going to landfill.
Oh, that's true. What sort of stuff would you make of it? Do you know at all? Once it's been used and it goes for recycle?
I'm not entirely sure, Alan. I think it just goes back into the typical recycling pool for plastics.
I would have thought so, yeah.
There's one more benefit to this that I really do want to share. It sort of ties to the work that Chris is doing. Through this social enterprise that we're purchasing this tape from, 50% of the profit made from the sale of this goes into biodiversity projects across Melbourne.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's that double-edged
sword. It's a win-win.
Yeah, it is, and it really creates those nice linkages to the stuff that Yarra Valley Water really value and we're trying to drive through Chris's work.
So somebody had to sit down because it wasn't made, obviously, until Yarra Valley Water started to look for someone who would produce it. So what made somebody at some point sit down and say, we can do better?
Yeah, so what we found was, and as I say, we've looked at this over a number of years, it was created overseas,
yep.
And it was really expensive.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. So one of the things that we're really, really value as an organisation is creating local jobs and creating opportunity for people in the community that we sort of live and we work.
Yep.
So it's sort of there's a couple of factors to it, but being able to get it in a really cost-effective way, being able to support local Melbourne business and having it recyclable, and then on top of that, you know, the cherry on top, supporting biodiversity projects, it just all really stacked up nicely for us, and we think it's a great outcome for our community.
Because unfortunately, a lot of consumers, while they would like to use some of this stuff, if you turn around and you've got to put their water rates up, all of a sudden they lose a bit of interest, don't they? But if you're coming through with a product that A, is creating jobs and is sustainable, well, it's a bit of a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's that balancing act for us as an organisation. We want to make sure that we are innovating and we are coming up with new and clever ways to support the environment and a community, but doing it in a way that is cost-effective and doesn't put pressure on our customers' bills.
Sounds good. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more.
Be all that I can. Look to you. message out on Yarra Valley FM through station sponsorship.
Our listeners want to hear about your business so they can support you while you support us.
We're a not-for-profit organisation run 100% by volunteers and serving our local community with an independent voice.
We also give local people the opportunity to learn valuable media skills.
Details of our sponsorship packages are on our Promote Your Business page at yarravalleyfm.org.au or call us on 0493 970 857.
Let us tell the Yarra Valley and beyond about your business.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Welcome back to Community Connections. We're talking to Yarra Valley Water and we're talking to both Chris and Mark. Tell us a little bit more about this honey eater and the... Because it's a little bird, is it? How big is it?
It's about 20 centimetres long. So, really tiny.
Yep.
And there's a gorgeous yellow bird. They have a black stripe across their face. They look like they're Zorro out there swashbuckling.
So... when you've got this habitat for them, like, do you envision that they'll just fly around that all day long, or will they go out to other people's gardens and, you know, have a bit of a nibble on some of the flowers and then go back, or...?
Hopefully they will expand. They will stick to their preferred habitat type, which is what we're creating.
Yep.
So that'll be a safe refuge from them. Obviously, some birds of prey might be able to get in there. Yep. We can't do anything about that.
You're not going to put a roof on, are you?
No. that's a big roof. So, you know, hopefully they do breed, they do expand, they do migrate out. It's really rescuing their population and creating that safe space for them to build up that resilience.
Would you see the possibility of a few of them taking off to another area and same sort of habitat and starting another colony out there, or is that not possible?
Absolutely would be the greatest thing ever. Yep.
And they could do that?
Very possibly.
They don't sort of just stay in the one area?
Look, once the species has reached a population size that they outgrow that territory, then they might send out little migration parties and recolonise.
But when you're talking sort of 35 hectares, it's going to take a lot of little critters to fill that up, isn't it?
Oh, definitely will. Definitely will. But that's the plan. We're going to keep this protected. We're going to keep it viable for them as a habitat. Yep. And hopefully we can get their numbers right up there. And then potentially they can expand back across their old haunt.
So have in the past, why have they just stayed where they are? Like, were there other areas around Victoria where they used to be and they've died out there? Or just trying to get why they've just stayed in the Yarra Valley.
There is a particular habitat type that they prefer to be around.
Right.
And that's what they live around their whole lives. When those trees get cleared and when the scrublands get cleared and their food sources disappear and their nesting sites disappear, they become very vulnerable. Mm. And that's why the numbers got so low. I think it got down to 50s potentially in the 1980s. So very few.
So they've been going downhill for a long while. Like, this hasn't just happened in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. No. It's happened over a long period of time.
It's a progressive decline in numbers. And luckily enough, we've had so many passionate people out there who are really... noticed this and worked so hard to keep their numbers from falling even further.
So now what about this little possum? We've talked about the bird. What about the possums? What sort of numbers are left and what sort of outcome are you hoping for them?
Well, I think we got to 34.
34?
That's in the captive bred program.
Yep.
And that will hopefully be released, you know, in the coming years. So... very few numbers. The particular lowland leadbeater possum wasn't even known until 20 or 30 years back. So there's the highland leadbeater's possum, which is extinct now.
Or now you're getting a bit technical. What's the difference between the two of them?
basically where they live. So it's very, very similar, but you know, very distinct, different species that live in different ranges. So one has disappeared entirely, but now working on this the lowlands and bring them back from the cusp of extinction.
True. Sounds like a great program. I've got to take one quick break and we'll be back to wind it up. Mark, just we've been talking a little bit about the assets of the Yarra Valley Water. So, what is it? I guess at some stage of the game, and well, we do know that some, particularly the sewer pipes, just burst, probably old age and all sorts of things. So, how do you repair those?
Yeah, we've got a number of technologies. One thing, we're really fortunate in this industry that it has developed in a way that is really now focused on minimising environmental impacts.
Yep.
We come into a street, a residential area, and we could be there on a water main renewal for 6 weeks. Yep. Now, one of the things that we're really mindful of doing is minimising the impact and disruption to access and egress to properties, but also to the livability of the area. It's one of the beautiful things about Melbourne, particularly through autumn, is we get these wonderful large trees. At Mitcham, we're really fortunate near our office. We don't want to be pulling those out to renew our assets and infrastructure. So we use predominantly trenchless technologies these days that allow us to actually bore under the ground through the existing hose pipe and then replace the asset to really minimise the amount of disruption we make to the livability of the area.
Can I just ask you, what's your biggest danger to, well, we'll particularly talk about the sewerage, and I guess the water's the same, is it the fact that tree roots get into it? Is it the fact that it just breaks down through old age, or that land subsides a bit and breaks them?
It's all the above. It depends on where we're talking about in the Yarra Valley Water region. We've got areas in the north that have got more reactive soils than we do in the south. In the southern part of our area, we've also got areas that are far older that don't have the newer infrastructure. What we do as an organisation, though, is we spend a lot of money condition assessing our assets, where we actually put, in the instance of our sewer pipes, yep, we put cameras down so we can understand what condition they're in and then prioritise their repair. So we're intervening just in time, and we're not ending up in a situation with our sewer where we're having unnecessary spills to environment, which, you know, we all want to avoid.
Well, yep.
With our water main renewals, we've got some really large water mains, and the consequence of those failing can be quite catastrophic.
Well, it could be for hundreds of people can't it?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, thousands of people. And we've got really clever programs that allow us to inspect those assets, as an example, through putting a pulse wave through that gives us a image of and a condition assessment. And again, that allows us as an organisation to prioritise work where we need to, prioritise our investment, and then plan for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years with our large assets.
And I guess one of the phone calls, and I'm not having a go at anyone here, but I guess one of the worst phone calls you get when you get a contractor say, "Oh, I've just put my backhoe through one of your main pipes." You must hate that.
Yeah, and it does happen. I mean, yep, one of the wonderful things about Melbourne is it's growing and it's expanding, and yep, you know, there's a lot of properties that are being redeveloped. You know, we've got a real problem on our hands with urban sprawl and trying to accommodate and house everyone in Melbourne. So it does happen. When it does happen, we work really closely with the parties involved to make sure that we're able to rectify the service and make sure that the community as a whole can continue to flush their loos and run their taps, but also then sort of work with the party who has maybe caused a little bit of damage to our asset to get it resolved as quickly as we can.
Can I just ask you, are the records, because we're talking 100, 120, 130 years ago, there weren't computers and all that sort of stuff, do you actually have really good plans of where the pipes are, or in some cases you just thinking, "Oh, I think it possibly goes there"? First of all, were the plans in the first place good enough for you to still work on them? Secondly, have you done any sorts of imaging over the years where you can actually work out where the pipes are?
Yeah, one of the wonderful things about the people who laid Melbourne out and built our infrastructure is they were meticulous in their record keeping. We had really high quality drawings. These days, everything is digital. We've digitised our asset base, and we use a system, and it's available through our app to our broader community, that overlays all of our assets on either Google Maps, for instance, or in our case, a program called GIS that allows us to look at where infrastructure is in relation to other pieces, what size it is, what depth it is.
And you're confident that you've got every bit of your hundreds of kilometres covered?
Yeah, well, you never say, "Well, we've got everything," but you know, we've got a maintenance contract, for instance, Alan, that delivers, you know, 100,000 pieces, individual pieces of work per year, and they're really heavily reliant on using that system to make decisions quickly.
Yep.
And that system holds us in really good stead to do that.
Terrific, isn't it? So a lot of our forefathers kept pretty good records on what they did, didn't they?
Yeah, they were wonderful draftsmen as well, and, you know, have provided us with great information that's been passed down. And we're really fortunate to live in an age where everything is on our mobile phone or our tablet, so if we need to make decisions or look things up while we're out and about in the community, it's really easy for us to do that.
Oh, that's terrific, isn't it? Because that's the sort of stuff that you really do need, don't you? And I know that I think it was I was trying to think who told me, but I know that some of the wells that we used to have in years ago have never been completely put on maps. And every now and then I heard a story where a house got built and it turned out it was on an old well or something, and it didn't go very well at all, to put it bluntly. So, I mean, it is really important in these days that we do have up to... Otherwise, your contractor can knock a hole in a pipe, can't they? Because they don't know they're there.
Yeah, they can. You can only know what you have available in front of you. Yeah. I think with our new infrastructure and assets, as we build those out, we keep really meticulous records, and we sort of maintained that standard back from Border Works and earlier as our infrastructure was built, and we put that into our same system of work.
So we certainly had some really forward-thinking people, didn't we, in some of this planning, or not so much planning, but in the documentation.
Yeah, absolutely, and also in terms of the quality of infrastructure that was built. I mean, it still blows my mind to think that, you know, a water main has been servicing multiple generations of Melburnians without failure. And, you know, we get the opportunity now as sort of the custodians of this work to replace it for the next 100 years.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the other issue, isn't it? So while their forefathers did it well, we've also got to make sure we keep up the same standard, and probably better, because we've got better equipment than what they had back 100 years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we sort of pride ourselves on being able to deliver really high-quality assets. Yeah, our drinking water standards are really important to us as an organisation.
We're waiting to see how you go in Tasmania later in the year.
Yeah, we're really hopeful. We're really proud of the drinking water, the quality we have in the Yarra Valley. And we see this as a way for us to continue to support that provision of great drinking water.
Mark and Chris, I've got to go. The 1 o'clock news is banging on the door. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.